At Dave Gill Chevrolet, we have back-to-school savings all month long. Check out our incredible selection of the latest Chevrolet models, including the rugged Silverado, the versatile Trax, and the stylish Equinox. We pride ourselves on exceptional customer service and unbeatable deals. So what are you waiting for? Visit us online at DaveGillChevy.com or stop by our dealership at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus. Dave Gill Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. See dealer for complete details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show. Almiron at the ready as the squad head for Austria. Ekitike aside, a more detailed look at the attacking alternatives. And a very special guest appearance from one of the key figures in Keegan's 90s revolution. Yes, it's Pod on the Tyne once again, and we welcome back Mr. George Culkin is ready to engage with football again. How are you doing, George?
I've never said that. I'm not ready to engage with anything.
Well, can you at least engage with me and Chris just for today, and then we'll see how it goes. We'll do like a phased return. Yeah,
is that okay? All right? Fine. Yeah, ease me back in gently, please.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I already haven't. That hasn't happened, has it, George? Because me and you saw each other earlier, and you're already very annoyed at me. So
I don't, Chris. People already think that I pick on you. So, but what I want everybody to know is that it's actually the other way around, because when the fixtures come out every single season, you find a way of sending me to fucking Brighton. And you're doing it again. You're doing it again. First away game of the season, and you're taking it off. You're taking it off, but then you're coming back for the home game the following weekend, which just happens to be Manchester City at home.
It's handy, isn't it?
I'm going to Brighton again. I've had some of the worst experiences of my life in Brighton. The Steve Bruce, what should have been the end of Steve Bruce, which didn't happen. No fans in the stadium. Awful. Last season, I can't even remember what happened. Marginally better. It was after the takeover, but Eddie Howe was in the... Oh, God, Brighton. You sent me to Brighton. I don't understand how this has happened in my life. What a welcome back from holiday.
Smashing bit of shithousery, that, Chris. Nicely done.
That's what it is.
Nicely done.
Well, that's quite all right. You know, this is my pre-season training for George to try and get his head back into the game. So
get him up to match fitness.
In Brighton.
Yeah.
Ugh. Oh, fantastic. Chris, you've had a bit of a haircut, haven't you? The council doing that annual haircuts again, are they?
Yeah, you always seem to have issues with my hair, don't you? Nobody ever seems to like my hair.
It looks like it's been cut from the inside, Chris, that's why.
Well, as I was telling you guys earlier, I don't enjoy the experience of getting my hair cut, because Alice now takes me to where she gets a haircut, and the woman who cuts my hair, she has a dog who hates me, shouts at me, barks at me, sorry, and then tries to piss
shouts
on me whenever I'm there.
The
so, yes, it's not. Shouts
dog,
at me.
The
I'm
dog
so
shouts
annoyed
at you, Chris. Chris.
To be fair, people try and piss on you wherever you go, though, Chris, so I'm not sure that's... And when Taylor said a bit of a haircut, it was actually accurate, because it does look like you've had a bit of a haircut, but not a full haircut. Anyway, that's enough personal insults.
Oh,
come on,
I'm so sorry. I can't get my head around a fucking dog shouting at Chris.
That's... Can I go back on holiday again?
Oh. Get your hair cut at you, Chris.
I'm better than this.
Oh, my word. Right, let's try and compose ourselves, chaps. We've got a podcast to do. Oh, thank you for providing light entertainment, Chris. As always, it's great fun. Right, of course, the squad have flown out to Austria now for their pre-season training camp. And they've beaten Gateshead 5-1 at the weekend as well. Miguel Almirón singled out for some praise after the game at Long Benton. A couple of goals and a decent performance. Chris, it's the kind of start that you need, isn't it? Albeit against the Gateshead side.
Yeah, well, I mean, pre-season friendlies, so often you'll hear managers say that the result isn't important, and the result, obviously, it doesn't really matter, but to get so many players, that basically 22 players had a 45-minute run-out, some of them, Almirón had only just returned a few days before that, and managed to grab a couple of goals. That's what he needs to add to his game. We know he needs to add more end product. He knows that Newcastle are potentially looking at right-sided forwards, and so his position could be under threat. And so, yeah, he's responded. Longstaff got a goal. Joe Linton scored a penalty as well, which in itself was great. Matt Ritchie is still there, and he scored too. So it was a run out. It was behind closed doors. I haven't seen any more than supporters who've seen stuff on YouTube. I've spoken to people, but I obviously wasn't there. It was behind closed doors. But I am very much looking forward to seeing Newcastle in action on Friday, and then next Monday when they play 1860 Munich and Mainz. I'm going out to Austria on Thursday, so it'll be interesting to see hopefully see Sven Botman make his debut.
You're happy to travel to Austria, Chris, are you?
Yeah, not via Brighton though.
Interesting.
The hills will be alive with the sound of Chris Wolf, I'm sure. And transfer chat, we'll do a little bit more of that on incomings later on. Kieran Clark hasn't travelled, is that right, Chris?
No, he hasn't. After training with the under-21s last week, he's had a medical at Sheffield United today, is my understanding, so he should be joining there on a season-long loan, which will take him through to the end of his contract. And then Jeff Hendrick has joined Reading on loan and scored minutes after joining them, I believe, in a behind-closed-doors friendly. Shows what Newcastle are missing. there we go. So
what's the recall clause in that loan deal, Chris? Can we get him back?
Well, if he keeps scoring, then they might want to. But there's two players who Eddie Howard said were no longer in his first team plans, particularly Kieran Clark, someone who really has been a very good servant to the club. Arrived after the relegation season, helped them through promotion, being someone who's been reliable for the past few years. And I think that a lot of fans will wish him a fond farewell.
Am I imagining this? Or did Jeff Hendrick score on his full debut for Newcastle as well? Didn't he score against West Ham first game of the season?
Did indeed.
Just get him on a one-game deal. Every club who signs him, get him on a one-game deal. And then that's it. Yeah, absolutely. George?
Yeah, it's important. I mean, that was one of the priorities for this summer. It sounds ridiculous, but is getting people out the door with the greatest of respect and doing that quickly, treating them the right way. Because as Chris said, they've done valuable service for the club. We know Isaac Hayden has left, still in mourning for that, obviously. And because you can't have big numbers around the squad, and the manager doesn't want that. Eddie Howe's made that very plain. The players who aren't going to be involved in the first team have been asked to train elsewhere. But that's an awkward situation and not one you want to linger. So it's very, very important to the club that they get those players out, but do it in the right way. And so there's no resentment.
Absolutely. Speaking of loan signings, Chris, Newcastle's greatest ever loan signing was? Who was your pick this week?
Well, quite controversially, I went for Joe Willock. Now, I admit there's probably a lot of recency bias in this.
Not Seydou Doumbia. Definitely not Seydou Doumbia.
he was a close second.
Islam Somani,
Joe Willock did break a goal-scoring record. I mean, in terms of the consecutive matches for his age, he's the youngest player ever to do it, and just that impact. I think in terms of what people expected to what he delivered, other notable mentions, Loic Remy was mentioned by a lot of people. There was also Martin Dubravka initially, Kennedy on his initial loan spell, but then also someone went a bit further back and mentioned Sylvain Distan, who was very, very good when he was on loan at Newcastle. So,
of course, absolutely. Right, then, more transfer chat on the back end, but let's get straight into the main event with our very special guest. Straight after this little bit of admin, though. You can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and you get full access to all of our great writing. as well as ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Sign up now. Come with you, Maggie. Right then, it's time to reveal the identity of our special guest for the day. I teased you online earlier on and there was some wild speculation as to who our entertainer would be. And it's not James Perch or Jimmy Nail or the Geordie Dancer, and it's definitely not Rude Hullett. Congratulations to Dave Crawford, who did guess correctly. And he's not just an entertainer, he's one of the entertainers. In fact, he's essentially a founding member. He's our favourite fullback, bomber on, and sporter of fabulously baggy shorts. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mr. John Beresford. So, John, really exciting to have you on the show. Almost 30 years since you joined Kevin Keegan's revolution at Newcastle United. How does it feel looking back on all that time that's passed?
All I can say is time flies when you're having fun. But you know what? It's hard to explain. I've got so many good memories. It's frightening. You talk about having reunions. The lads are talking about it now. Because every time I'm lucky enough that I still work at the club and I can still invite players back to the club, whether it be David Kelly, whether it be Scott Sellers, whether it might be David Ginola, or whoever it may be, I still have great times to remember. But because some of the lads now will have disappeared, going back to like Alex Maffey, Barry Venison, Paul Bracewell, but where it all started, they kind of pestered me and say, Bez, can you organise, you know, a get together? And I think we've got a chance now because under Mike Ashley, he had no kind of compassion to think about the club as itself. I used to say, can we organise like an entertainer's game? And he wouldn't let me use the club's name, wouldn't let me use the club's sort of emblem.
Yeah,
I'm just hoping now, because how it's changed into a better place, that we can maybe reminisce a little bit more about it.
Well, we're going to come on to the present day in a bit, if that's all right. I do want to sort of take you right back 30 years. You shouldn't, or should I say left back 30 years, you shouldn't really have signed for Newcastle in the first place, should you? Because you should have signed for Liverpool. I mean, you were a massive signing for Newcastle at the time, but you could have gone to Liverpool. Go back to that moment, please, and how you felt about it falling through at Liverpool and then coming on to join Newcastle.
My contract was up at Portsmouth. I'd been tapped up, which was in them days was illegal, but I got a phone call from Graeme Souness at Liverpool saying, you know, would you like to come and join me? We'd just been beaten by them in the final of the Cup, so I was talking on air. I'm going to sign for Liverpool Football Club, you know, they'd won the FA Cup. I was going to be playing in Europe. And then I went up to Anfield with my dad. I didn't have an agent. And just literally went in, did the medical, and then there was a sixth sense there was something not quite right. Anyhow, Graeme Souness came to me and he says, have you ever fractured your ankle? And I said, yeah, I did it years ago when I was at Barnsley. He said, it's not set properly. And he got a couple of the board had said, we're not signing any more people unless they're 100% fit. Now, I'm now begging him, saying, you've got to make this happen, please, because I'm thinking no one's ever going to touch me. Cut a long story short, Graeme Souness says, John, I'm sorry, until I can get the board to agree this, the deal's off. Now, I'm coming out of Anfield. I'm not going to lie, I'm in tears. And my dad's trying to console me. I'm saying, Dad, I'm screwed. Nobody's going to touch me. I phoned Jim Smith up, my manager at Portsmouth, and he just went, Bez, that's bollocks. I'm saying, you might think it's bollocks, but the deal's off.
Yeah.
He went, don't worry. And I went, what do you mean, don't worry? He says, somebody else wants you. And I was like, who's that? He went, Kevin Keegan at Newcastle. Now, no disrespect, I'd played against Newcastle that season and Keegan had come in and helped them to survive. And they weren't a great team, to be honest. And he just went, look, give him a call. Now, Keegan was a boyhood hero of mine, so I was kind of okay. And I remember pulling up at Birch Services. I didn't have a mobile phone. I pulled up at Birch Services. I had a number to ring. And I phoned him, and this is exactly what happened. I went, hello. His voice went, who's this? I went, it's John Beresford. And I heard this voice going, thank you so much. Get yourself up here. Come and sign for me now. And I'm like,
wow.
Hang on a bit. I said, do you realise what's just happened? And he's like, no, what's up? I says, I've just failed the medical at Liverpool. And he started laughing. He says, oh, don't worry. He says, I've just signed Paul Bracewell. You'll piss hours. What was it now? He said, do you know where Gosforth Park Hotel is? And I went, no. He went, you can't miss it. It's next to the horse racing. He says, go up to the A1 until you see the horse racing sign. Get off, big hotel. Can't miss it. And I pulled in. Me and my dad pulled in there. I could see it. I'm like nudging my dad. And I'm going, Dad, look, Keegan's there. Tell your man. They're there. And I pulled into the car park and they came out to meet me. And honestly, the next hour was just, to people who've met Kevin and met him for the first time, especially in where he was at that time, his enthusiasm, he's got this aura about him. He brought me in, he went, oh, don't you worry about what's happened today. Blessing in disguise. You're going to sign for me. We're going to promote this year. I'm going to get the England squad. We're getting Europe. And I'm thinking, he's on drugs, you know. And I remember, yeah. It was just a blur. I remember coming out of the meeting and me and my dad, by this time, I'd signed. and this is where it was unbelievable as well. Because I didn't have an agent, but I'd agreed a contract with Graham Souness. I phoned the PFA, so I got an idea of what fee I should be asking for, wages-wise. And Keegan said to me, he says, I'll show you how big we're going to be. And I'm going, yeah, whatever, I read it all. And he went, he says, I've already spoke to Graham Souness. And I'm like, right. He went, well, he says, I found out what he's offered you, your wages at Liverpool. And he matched them. Before I could even talk about contracts, he says, I want to show you that we're going to be competing with them likes of Liverpool.
Wow.
So like, for me, I'm signing for, you know, this person who I thought was iconic as making me as a boyhood hero. Straight away, I'm thinking, what do you want me to do? I'll do anything you want, you know, Gaffer, you know. And from that moment on, I had the best 6.5 years under his leadership that I've ever had in my life. It was just ridiculous.
It's unbelievable that you're having done all that for you, that you told him to fuck off a couple of years later on the pitch. You know, but there you go.
I phoned him up in literally, when was the last time I spoke to him? About 3 years ago, and he was doing a dinner, and I was going to be at the dinner itself, and he literally came up to me, "What's your language?" He still reminds me of it every time I meet him.
It's amazing.
It's funny when it happened, though, because you know the lads, you know, you're looking for help with lads, and everybody. Oh, shit, by the way. Oh, don't worry, made me work for it, put it that way.
And obviously the story for that, for people who either weren't alive or don't remember, that's a scary thought. But that was one of those rare games. I think you'd given the ball to David and bombed forward, and Kevin had suggested that perhaps you should hang back for once, and that was your response, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's funny. Do you know what's called the lazy? One of those heat of the moment. I told him to fuck off, and I'm sort of like trying to think. Has he heard me? And then all of a sudden, I saw Robbie Elliott warming up. And, he's heard me. And then I got subbed after about 15-20 minutes.
Amazing.
Bears, can I just take you back? So you said you're signed for Newcastle, and you come up. You speak to Keegan, but you said you'd played them the season before, didn't think they were great. Even after what Keegan said to you, what were your thoughts going into that 92-93 season? What were you thinking was going to, what did you think was going to happen?
Once I'd spent pre-season there, and I saw the likes of Ken Sheedy, then we signed Barry Venison, I could see the quality of Gavin Peacock, David Kelly, Lee Clark, and then you got some great talent with like, such as Steve Watson, Robbie Elliott, and the big one of the big characters at the change room at that time was Brian Kilcline.
Of course.
So I could see all of a sudden I could kind of see that there was a team there to compete, but I just didn't think it had had any guidance. But the strange thing is where Keegan just made the training so much fun. It was so relaxed. It was so good play and everything. He allowed the freedom. So all of a sudden, when we started playing in pre-season, you start to see things clicking. And I'm thinking, hang on a bit, we're onto something here. But the biggest thing of all, it was just If anybody's seen the film Life of Brian and you just want to follow something, we all believed that we could play in the top division. We just needed someone to take us there. And it was like, whatever he said, I believed in. And then all of a sudden, with the experience of Franco Klein and such as Paul Bracewell and Venice, all of a sudden I was going, hang on a bit. Yeah, we're on to something here.
Yeah.
And I think the first 10 games we won.
Yeah, 10 in a row, wasn't it?
And it was just, it was the belief that the manager put into us. But I just think it was a group of kind of, mismatched players who got quite good characters.
Yeah.
But kind of needed someone to believe in.
The start of that season, John, was special for me. It was the first season I started going to St James's Park and watching Newcastle. I was 10 years old, and my first game was the first game of that season against Southend United, and they won 3-2 at home. I believe Paul Bracewell scored the first goal, an absolute rocket. But I wasn't old enough, obviously, to kind of sample the delights of the Quayside and the town centre at that time. But what was the atmosphere like around the town? I'd imagine it would have been fever pitch walking around the city and in the bars and stuff like that at the time.
Yeah, I couldn't get my head around it. It was brilliant. You know, some people, I think, can find it intimidating. Some people can find it a little bit unnerving. I think we embraced it, the group, again. I think you had the characters that could embrace it. You know, when you go down to the Quayside, it's busy, you know. I think the fans were ready for something to change. They could feel it as well. I just think when they want to talk about the game, who are you playing, who are going to win, who, are we going to win? It was, how many we're going to win by? Keegan was already feeding the fans, you know.
Yeah.
He played at the club. He understood how the club worked. He understood the mentality of the Geordie, which is a weird one to understand, by the way. But you can work it. You've got to get them on the feet, and if they're with you, honestly, the noise, the feeling, and as I say, the place became party town, and I sensed that the city was growing as well as the football club. But you know, I've seen players come and go over the last 25 years who can't handle.
Yeah,
they find it a little bit too intense. They find it a little bit overpowering, a bit intimidating. That's why, you know, if you're a bit of a shy kind of, and you've got a shy nature, I would have said probably Newcastle United is not for you.
So for me, that was also a massively important season. It's probably my favourite season as a Newcastle fan. I went to every home game that season. I will always be in love with you, John, and your teammates because of that season and Kevin and the way it was. One of the things that I think, and one of the things that I'm really pleased about what's happening at the club now, is the parallel with that season. So, you know, the season before, Newcastle not far off oblivion. I mean, you know, obviously that was relegation last season. A takeover happens, a new manager comes in, and then there's that huge uplift in the city. We saw the scenes, you know, once the takeover happened last season. Now there's that clamour for tickets for every home game. Do you see that parallel between now and 30 years ago? And, you know, I'm pleased because it means that the next generation is getting to experience a little bit of what I experienced and Taylor experienced, albeit the football's not, you know, not quite of the same quality.
No, but it's exactly the same. You know, there's so many parallels to it, you know. Because I still work at the club and, you know, I've been doing the games in the corporate, I was about to jack it all in. I'd had enough. I was turning into an old moaning git. The football was awful. Just, it wasn't enjoyable. The takeover came. I didn't expect the takeover to materialise how it has. You know, how coming in has just blown me away. I thought it'd do okay, not do what it's done. But what didn't surprise me was once you get the right players in, which is what I'm talking about, and you get the right players who can handle the intensity of what it is like playing in front of a Newcastle United crowd. Like when the Spurs game happened, we'd still got the old team. We hadn't signed anybody. And I said, and I hate being sort of like, you don't criticise always, but I'd seen this team and I'm going, They hadn't got characters. They didn't have any what I call bollocks. They had a team of players who played in their own little world and just looked after themselves, and that's why they were at the bottom of the league. All of a sudden, Howe comes in, he signs Trippier. What a signing is just unbelievable. But he could handle it all straight away. All these players that came in seemed to go, do you know what? They're big personalities. And then all of a sudden, they embraced it. And what happens is, and it was what happened when I was at Newcastle, when Barry Venison came, who played at Anfield, and Paul Bracewell, Goodison, you know, all of a sudden, Killer, Brian Kilcline, you know, Kevin Sheeder, then all of a sudden it rubs off on me. Then it goes down the list to Lee Clark and the younger players and everything else. And then it spreads around the whole team. And that's what it did. What the sort of the takeover allowed was to get the right players in, for the fans then to have something to shout about. So, and like I said, the Geordies are going to react one way. They're going to go for it. They're going to give you everything. And it's up to the players then to react. And they did. And honestly, what I have seen from January onwards has just been phenomenal. But it's just been awe-inspiring. You know, like I'm getting, can you find me tickets? Is there any way? It's just gone mental again. And you know what? Long may it continue. Because, as I said, all the old players, I hope, will get invited back. I used to invite a player to every game. I've now been asked, can I invite two players? So, as you can guess, I'm inviting all my mates. So, I think for the first game, because it's Notts Forest, I've got Stevie Watson coming back. And then I've also got, because I always try and mix one up, I've got Franz Kaar, because he was Notts Forest.
Oh, Franz Kaar, yeah.
Ooh.
So, all of a sudden, like Franz Kaar out of the blue, Bez, I haven't been back to the club. I mean, mate, come back, come and enjoy it. Because he just says, I says, the experience you'll get, it'll be second to none. And this is why you say Newcastle, once you've played at Newcastle, it does leave something in you. And I said, the more time you spend there, the more it gets under your skin. So as I say, it's a fantastic place to be at the moment.
Talking about another former Newcastle player, I did a piece. We've been running a series at The Athletic about kind of great performances in the individual performances in the Premier League era. And one of the ones that was chosen by the panel, wasn't us, was Man City 3, Newcastle 3, in the famous season, February 95-96, in which Philippe Albert seemed to be transformed into a auxiliary striker, because he certainly wasn't playing in defence, and he scored twice, and it was an amazing game. Obviously Newcastle, still absolutely in the thick of the title race at that point, would go on to play Man United the next week and have a bit of a heartbreaker. But what are your memories of that game, and what are your memories of playing alongside, well, I'm not sure how often you were alongside Philippe, but what are your memories of playing with Philippe?
The weirdest thing, this is where, you know, you look back and you see the little things of, like, people go, where did it go wrong? But you see the little cheats. We turned up at Main Road, and it was always a big game for me. I got released from Man City.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So I was like, I turned up, and, you know, the gaffer had done what he normally does. He names the team, and then I'm like, looking at the team, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's fine. And then all of a sudden he came to us. Now, as you all know, the gaffer weren't into tactics. We all kind of knew what we're doing.
Three at the back, yeah.
Now, usually, a Sunday league team would probably work on it for 5 minutes. We didn't even know, and he went, and I'm in the end, so I'm thinking, well, I must be playing left wing back then. So, honestly, all of a sudden, and I think Derek Fazakli came and said to me, he says, Bez, just go with it, because I was a bit chirpy. I kept my mouth shut, and I'm going, where are we going with this? Anyway, he says, we're playing three at the back, we're playing with wing backs, and anyhow, I've never looked at the full game back. I've seen the highlights a couple of times. And I think a couple of times I'm in the box and Philippe scoring. I'm thinking, how's that happening? You know? But yeah, our best, we used to call him, we had an overlapping centre forward, didn't we? Which was Philippe Albert. He just believed.
It's amazing.
That we would score more goals than them. We did score three again, yeah. But hey, it was a little bit organised chaos. But I wouldn't have minded us playing that. I would have just liked to have probably had half an hour just running through with a bit of shape, but the gaffer didn't like doing that.
John, you played behind David Ginola, and obviously he wasn't a great one for tracking back in particular. Newcastle have got their own mercurial Frenchman currently, Alan Saint-Maximin. How would you have fancied playing behind Alan Saint-Maximin?
Oh, no, he'd done my head in. Playing behind that.
I thought that might be the case, to be honest.
Oh, honestly. I knew I was the water carrier. I knew I had to would get two'd up. My job was to literally slow people down if I'm getting teed up and then give it the Frenchman to do whatever he does. David would create, he would torture the fullbacks. Do not get me wrong. Saint-Maximin has got ability that I could only dream about. Mm-hmm. The trouble is, he needs someone to get in his head and slow him down.
Yeah.
He has to make better decisions. It's one of those, isn't it? It's like, you can see it, physical specimen. I mean, he's electric quick. He's so strong. He can chop on either foot. But as I say, his decision making is horrendous. and but this way, you've got to have people behind him. You know, don't you? David would get carried away sometimes. If people doubled up on David, sometimes, you know, his Frenchness would be, "How shall I can beat both of you?" But if you've got, sometimes if I'm shouting and then he got someone like David Batty shouting, Rob Lee shouting, "Oi," you know, and there's a few languages going in there going, "Fucking, we got a spare man here."
Yeah.
And then, and don't get me wrong, David would then realise we'd now go out the other way and then you overload on somebody else. So, yeah, don't get me wrong, you know, when you've got talent like what Saint-Maximin has and David has, they want to show it, but you've got to know when to show it. Yeah. That's the difference. Don't get me wrong. All the fans are shouting and everything else for Saint-Maximin, but sometimes the fans have got to be better not to shout because he gets excited and thinks he's got to beat the world.
Bess, obviously you watch the current team a lot, and you've mentioned Saint-Maximin. I mean, the business they've done so far this summer, what have you made of that? And also, what would you like to see before the start of the season? What do you think Newcastle still need?
To be honest, if Wilson's fit, fantastic. I think Wood was the only signing where I thought he could have done better. But when I looked at it and I sort of like really looked into it closer, he was brilliant for the team because he led the line. He probably didn't get goals and probably show off the ability which I'd like. We probably didn't get enough crosses in for him, so he could have been like show what he really could do like he did at Burnley.
Yeah.
But what he did do is he gave a presence up front. He gave it when the ball did come away. He held it up enough to get everybody to come and join in. We all know that, as I said, I mentioned Trippier. I think Dan Burn coming in, having that steeliness, he's a Geordie. I think he brings a lot of character to the team. And then you're going Target again, always improving, fantastic level. Probably lacks a little bit of pace, if you were to say that's a weakness. But what he does and what he's good at is the basics. Great tackler, great passer, great touch, and he makes it. And you know what? As I say, and what I like about him, he's British as well. He cares, and you can see that in his play. I mean, everyone raves about Bruno. Don't get me wrong. He's a class act, and he is going to be iconic for Newcastle United. That's what the fans have been waiting for, someone like that.
Yeah.
They want someone that they can grab hold to. They want something special, like your Beardsleys, like your Ginolas, you know, Tino Estrellas, you know, you go through it. They want something that's different, but it gets people off the seat, you know. And he fits into that position or into that person, into that player that what Newcastle wants. So it was like you say, every signing he did, I think, has been brilliant. I was interested to see who's coming this summer. Botman's come. I'll be honest with you, not seen him. I haven't got a clue. I've heard rave reviews. People are telling me he's up there. He's a proper player. So I would look for maybe one more signing, a centre forward of such. I'm looking for something with electric pace, something that can come off and just be a little bit dynamic, something a little bit different, somebody who can open the doors a little bit. I know they were looking at such a Jesse Lingard, but I think he thinks he's better than what he is, but he's got a bit of talent. So you've got to be careful as well. You want players who are going to come in, not jump on the bandwagon just because it's Newcastle United and they can spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that the signings they've done is just carry on the way they are. They're not wee stupid, which I think is fantastic. They're not sort of like paying stupid over the odds money where you're going to have what happened at Middlesbrough when they had, you know, they just signed Janinho and you can remember what happened there. And you've got people on mega money and people on lower money.
Yeah.
And then there's harmony in the dressing room. You've got to have everybody fighting for the same cause. So you're hoping that they're not only doing the homework on sort of the player, I'm hoping they're going, his character, he's even fit of what it suits in Newcastle United. And I think that's what the difference is about. So I'm thinking the signings that they've come in, I'd like to just see, I don't know, just something that, like a person who's going to come off the bench and he's like an impact player. I think we could just sign Little Diamond before the season starts.
And if that happens and Newcastle do get that player, what do you think is a realistic target for Newcastle in this coming season? I mean, one of the lovely things about the last few months has been the sort of lack of judgment around the club. Everyone's just very happy knowing that the team's getting better and that the club's getting better. But what do you think they should be looking at or are capable of looking at next season?
They're capable of looking top 10. I'm pushing them to be top 8. Honestly, that is perfect progression of where we've been. We were going down last year. No qualms about it. We were going down. The change around has been phenomenal. So you've got to be careful just how far. Don't get overexcited. All the new players have got to connect. They've got to spend pre-season all getting to know each other, getting the likes, you know, which side do they like the ball, you know, is he a person who needs a cuddle? Is he a person who needs a bother? All these things make a difference. This is where pre-season is so important. This is why, you know, the modern day footballer sometimes, you know, you have to say, oi, get them earphones off, you know, talk to somebody. and I say some bits of the old school mixed with the new player, it'll go so far. And I think that's what Eddie Howe still is. He's getting, you know, I know Dan Byrne. I know that a lot of players, Trippier, they're old school.
Yeah.
They've been brought, like, if you look at Burnley's and places like that, they bring that in the modern day, to the modern day player. He's a little bit more, you know, he needs a bit more wrapped up in cotton wool. He needs a cuddle. He needs to be telling how good he is. But sometimes you have to take the bollocking in the right way and go, come on, let's make a difference. So, yeah, the club is now is on a great standing. We've got an exciting season ahead. All I do ask for, and I just thought that let's have a right good go at the Cups.
Yeah.
It means a lot to the fans. And for us to come and do it, Jesus, well, they'll make a stand for where he can put his statue, won't they, Eddie Howe?
Yeah.
It's about 6 games, isn't it? We've got to win.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, obviously you came so incredibly close of that fabulous team. You'll always be legends for that, no matter what. How messy do you think Newcastle would be if and when they do break their duck when it comes to trophies in the modern era?
I'll be going missing for a week. if the game was on Saturday, you'd have to shut next week in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're closed. Yeah,
the big market will be like the last days of Rome, wouldn't it?
it'd be phenomenal. It's crying out for it. As I say, it will happen. You know, I used to say, you know, I used to go and do talkings and things like that. And when I did the talking, when, you know, when Mike Ashley was in charge, I'm just saying, look, it's not going to happen. You have to be open and honest. I'm saying it's never going to happen in my lifetime. Well, what's in place at the moment? All of a sudden now, we've got the ability to dream, we've got the ability to hope, and we've now got the faith in something that can happen. And as I say, it's like we're having these chats now. You know, we wouldn't be having this chat, we're on this podcast, if literally this takeover had taken place.
I mean, that to kind of bring us back round to the start, I mean, that is the other parallel with 30 years ago, isn't it? At the end of that season, you've got Kevin saying, tell Alex Ferguson we're coming after him, and my God, you did it, you know, and now you've got an ownership saying our aim is to win something, and you see how the city and the club and the fan base responds to that ambition. It's incredible.
It really is, but as I say, it only works if every component is on board.
Yeah.
It was like Kevin Keegan with Sir John Hall, making sure that he could buy who he wanted. Then it was Keegan getting the right players in. Then it was Keegan and Terry and Mike, Derek Fazakle, you know, the coaching staff, getting us to sort of be as best we could.
Yeah.
And then the fans on board to take it to the next step. Because, as I say, I've played in games. It's funny, when I played at Barnsley and we were crap, honestly, you know, all refereeing decisions went against us. When I was at Newcastle and you're battering people, funny enough, you get decisions going for you.
Yeah. So, John, just before we finish up, I wanted to mention you were given an MBE in 2017 for some of the educational work that you did with Show Racism the Red Card, and you worked alongside Shaka Hislop on those campaigns. It must be great to see your old friend recognised by the city as well.
Been absolutely brilliant. Honestly, Shaka is one of the... And you always say this when people get the awards and everything else, but I can tell you, and people who've ever met him, he is one of the nicest, greatest people you ever wish to meet.
Yeah.
What he's sort of done since, you know, leaving football and, you know, to make a difference to people's lives. All I did was piggyback him, you know. I held his shirt there. I told him my stories growing up, I came from a concrete jungle, you know. And you try and educate. The thing it is with things like racism or any kind of education with kids, whether it be Islamophobia or whatever it is, it's all education. If you can go into schools, catch it early enough, get them to think about what they're doing, what they're saying, you know what? It's funny enough, the world becomes a better place.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Some great stories. And hopefully we'll speak to you again in the future after Newcastle have won that first cup. That'll be amazing, wouldn't it?
Cheers, boys. Great.
Thanks a lot for having us, John.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
My God, I feel like I need to have a lie down after that interview with John Beresford. He just, it's just got so much energy, hasn't he? And just like he was in his playing days as well. And he's still so full of enthusiasm for football and for Newcastle United. And I could listen to him talk and tell stories for hours, Chris. It's just fantastic to have him on. And what a great interview.
Yeah, well, you want to get yourself in the box as St. James's then and get listening to him.
Definitely.
Again. Because, you know, he's such a great character. He's always, whenever you message him about anything, he always... I just love it how he always signs off with Bez as well. It's great. That's just who he is.
Fantastic.
Yeah, of course, part of a very, very special team and a very, very special era. Lovely to reminisce about that, but also to feel that hope of it, of that sort of feeling being back again. So, and because, you know, it's also lovely. It's lovely to hear that former players like him, but also others that he's now able to bring back to the club, are involved and that they're integral and that the club actually want them to come back, because for far too long there's been huge negligence there about Newcastle's former heroes. Brilliant that they're back under the umbrella.
Chris, you've got a long read on Elliot Anderson, which has just come out. He's fresh from his heroics down at Bristol last season and looking to impress Eddie Howe in pre-season. What's the sort of thoughts about him at the minute? It was looking likely he was going to go out on loan, but do we think if he has a good pre-season, he might stick around?
There is that possibility. I mean, I think the likelihood is he probably will go out on loan, because he's at a stage where it's really essential for him to keep playing. But Eddie Howe is having a real look at him, and I've spoken to people in and around the club and people close to Elliot Anderson for this piece, to sort of look at his situation, because he fully believes in himself. He believes that... He gave an interview actually out in Austria today with Tommy Stubby from the club, and he basically says within that I want to be playing regularly somewhere, and I hope that's here. Mm. He has full confidence in his own ability, and he the other players in the squad, some of the first teamers, including Alan St. Maximin, really do like him and think that he really brings something in and around the team. So he did do very, very well out at Bristol Rovers. Newcastle would have ideally liked him to have been a little bit higher in the football pyramid than League Two. It is a huge step to go from League Two to Premier League, but Howe's having a real look at him. Until more attacking players arrive, then there is every possibility that if he impresses, then he could stick around, because but a lot of Championship clubs and basically all of League One clubs want to sign him on loan. Newcastle will have a real think about where they are going to send him, if they do send him, what style of football they want, how's he going to play, what sort of manager is it. And it may turn out that a top half League One team might be better than a bottom half Championship for someone in terms of the amount of possession he'd get, the amount of opportunities he'll get. But until Newcastle signs someone, the very good thing about Elliot Anderson from Newcastle's point of view is he doesn't need to be named in the 25-man squad because of his age, the senior squad. So therefore, they could potentially keep him around without moving on quite as many players. So I still think in about a fortnight's time, he's probably likely to go out on loan. But he was always going to be given the first 2-3 weeks of pre-season. And then after Austria, they'll see where he's going to head.
It's an interesting one, this, George, isn't it? Because you want him to get minutes under his belt. You want him to develop and you want him to play lots and lots of games. But at the same time, if Newcastle have a talent like that, somebody who is potentially a game changer, you want to maybe keep him around the club if he's going to have some kind of impact. And, you know, there's been lots of comparisons made with other players, and it might be a bit reductive at the minute. They're so early in his development, but he's an exciting boy. And, you know, we need somebody with that kind of spark.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Again, with this, you feel far more confident that the club will look after him properly now, and that there will be joined up thinking about where he goes, what he does, and how it works. It won't just be left to the manager. It takes me back, in fact, to when Rafa turned up at Newcastle and asked around about who he should be looking at from the younger age groups that weren't in the first team. And he was told, you know, he claims that he was told nobody. And of course, Ivan Toney then leaves and is now a Premier League player in his own right. And, I'm not trying to kind of cast blame there or anything like that, but there's a very real point to be made that the idea is that there wasn't enough communication between the various parts of the club. This is Dan Ashworth's job, first and foremost, to make sure that everybody is talking. And as I say, you can feel far more secure and confident that whatever the pathway is marked out for Elliot Anderson, it'll be a sound one and a secure one, most importantly for him, but also for the club. So yeah, he looks like a very exciting talent. It's a massive leap. Making that leap to the Premier League is the most difficult leap at all. But feel positive that that he's in safe hands now.
Chris, you've been looking at the Ekitike alternatives this week as well. There's been a number of different names mentioned. Moussa Diaby's been in there. Sweden's Alexander Isak's been mentioned today as well by a few journalists. And there's been talk going around that he's been used as almost like a template as the ideal signing for Newcastle United. A few whispers that the club might actually be moving for him.
Yeah, well, the Alexander Isak is someone who Newcastle like, and Steve Nixon, the head of recruitment, has followed him for a long while, and everyone at the club likes him, including Eddie Howe. And when I looked at this alternatives for Hugo Ekitike last week with Mark Carey, our data writer, we used Alexander Isak as that template, mainly because Hugo Ekitike hasn't played enough to really have the data set to be compared to someone, and because we knew that Alexander Isak was still featuring heavily in conversations, recruitment conversations at Newcastle United. We wrote that in the piece. Subsequently, Luke Edwards from The Telegraph has written that Newcastle are considering making a club record bid for Alexander Isak. And basically, I think they're at a point where they're trying to decide what they want to do forward-wise. They've moved back from Ekitike, who reportedly is now in talks to sign for Paris Saint-Germain. And we know that they would ideally like a centre-forward and a right-winger. It may be that if they're trying to sign someone like Alexander Isak permanently, they'll then wait till later in the window and try and sign a right-winger on loan. Or because Isak can play anywhere across the front three, or other players like that can, They're just trying to work out what they can do with the finances they have left, because they've given themselves that time. They've afforded themselves that by doing the rest of the business early. Now they need to focus on who's available, what they can do, and they're basically looking out in the market and seeing, piecing together what they might be able to achieve in the remainder of the window. So I think that we're likely to possibly see a signing like that plus a loan signing. Or at least that's what Newcastle are working towards right now, but we may hear more from Eddie Howe out in Austria this weekend as to where Newcastle really are with transfers.
Yeah, George Alexander Isak's very young and very raw and still learning the game, still learning his trade. Didn't have the best of seasons last season, only 6 goals in the league. But it seems to be the kind of template of player that Newcastle are looking at. Diaby, Ekitike, if I can get the pronunciation right, and Isaac, they're all similar players, aren't they?
Well, there is that very important thing. They acknowledge that the age of the squad is too high and way too high, and bringing down that average age is something that's very important moving forward. So yeah, fits that same. That's a very broad brushstroke I've just given, but that they want players who can develop with them. So they knew that with Etiquette. Oh, God, I can't say him now either. It's catching it. They knew with Hugo.
Stupid that, name that, isn't it? Stupid
they
name.
They knew with Hugo that they were buying somebody that wouldn't necessarily be the finished article straight away, but could develop and grow with them. And again, as I said about Elliot Anderson, we do have that confidence now that players who are brought into the club won't just gradually get worse as they get older, but can be given the sort of territory and landscape to kind of grow into and get better. So that is something that they want to do. They want to bring people in. They want to increase their value.
Yeah.
At some point, Newcastle will do business, you know, selling and buying, and you know, because all clubs do that, whether it's Man City, whether it's whoever, and that's an important part of Newcastle's development. They can't just end up with players who are 30 and 31 and 32 and have no sell-on value.
Yeah.
They have to develop players for themselves, either bringing them through themselves, like with Elliot Anderson, or by bringing people in. So yeah, I'm sure that's a very conscious situation that the players, some of the players they're looking at are a very similar tender age.
Other rumours this week, Chris. Anthony Gordon, Everton, was one of those names linked. Not often do you see a player who unites St James's Park in hatred as much as he did. But he's another name that's been mentioned, and another promising young player as well.
Yeah, he's someone who back in January was floated as someone who Newcastle liked. And yes, that Dan Ashworth, or at least other people at the club, have sort of basically, I think, gone to Everton as they have to several other clubs about several other players and sort of asked the question of how much would it cost. And they got a very high figure back from Everton. And it was interesting the way the story came out last week. I was immediately sceptical because Newcastle have been keeping things very close to their chest, and just the way that it came out, and subsequently then David Ornstein for The Athletic reported that basically Anthony Gordon may be getting a new contract from Everton. It struck me immediately as that. I just can't see Everton selling the sort of crown jewels this summer. As much as they need money and as much as Richarlison's gone, it strikes me as one which is unlikely for this summer. But he is a player who Newcastle rate highly. He's a hard-working winger who really did help Everton survive. He was probably the reason they did survive in the end. So, yeah, I think it's unlikely this summer, though.
And after he appeared on the podcast last week, Seb Stafford Blue and the team over at Tifo, they released their Newcastle United recommended transfers video. A couple of interesting names in there, Chris. Christian Pulisic is one of those names that was mentioned in that. Lofty ambitions as far as that transfer goes, but I could see the logic behind it.
Yeah, I mean, Pulisic seems to be someone who keeps being linked away with Chelsea. Hasn't really ever quite settled there, hasn't really produced his Borussia Dortmund form consistently. He scores goals, but I'm not sure. He might be a little bit above the age profile of what Newcastle are looking at now, a little bit more experience there. But late in the window, as I've said, if they come to a stage where they're going to try and sign players on loan and someone like Pulisic becomes available, wouldn't surprise me, although I think someone like maybe Hudson-Odoi there, he's maybe someone who on loan later in the window. That's something Newcastle may explore.
Excellent stuff. So check out that video over on Tifo, the recommended transfers. Not recommended transfers, sensible transfers, isn't it, Chris? That's what it's called, sensible transfers.
It is, indeed.
Of course. Yeah. Excellent, really good video. Check that out. Right then, anything else, chaps, before we finish up?
Absolutely not.
No? Lovely stuff. Well, George, I must say it's been a delight to have you back. It really has.
Why must you say that?
Well, it's just I'm contractually obliged. It's in the script.
I thought so. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. It's been a sheer pleasure to be back.
Yeah.
Well, I've just enjoyed hearing both of you try to pronounce Hugo Ekitike. So that's been my enjoyment for the day.
I'll give you a word that I can pronounce.
What?
No, that makes sense. We Chris and I actually ended before going away on holiday. It feels like a. Feels like a long time ago now, but with a lovely evening out at the Hoppings, Chris and I had together. We were on the roller coaster together.
It was on Twitter. It looked amazing.
Yeah.
Did you win him a big teddy bear on the hookah duck, George, or did you keep that for yourself?
No, we did have a go of the penalty shootout game, which I'm very annoyed. I struck three brilliant penalties right down the middle, but unfortunately the holes were to either side, so I didn't win anything.
You didn't do what you said you need to do for a penalty.
Yeah, but it wasn't an actual penalty, was it, Chris? It was about
the man who's so adamant you have to twat a penalty, and then he didn't.
Yeah, but there wasn't a goalkeeper, was there, Chris? So it's not the same thing. Anyway, Chris did get one in. He fluked one in, which was very annoying. But but yeah, that was good. Great to see the Hoppings back.
Lovely stuff. Right then, chaps, let's call it a day. Thanks very much for your time. And don't forget, all of you lot out there, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months right now at theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Thanks a lot to Chris and George. And thanks, of course, to John Beresford as well for being a fantastic guest. Thanks a lot to you lot for listening as well. We'll be back next week. We'll speak to you very soon. To all of you out there, take care. And from everyone at Pod on the Time, thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Etiquette aside, a more detailed look at the attacking alternatives.
It's etiquette. You did this last week.
What did I say? Etiquette.
Yeah. It's etiquette, not etiquette. Etiquette.
You can't even say it wrong.
The Athletic.